The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. Whatever stage your business is at, there's always time to imagine sustainable, positive change. AIB, for the life you're after.
Well, from the fields of Armagh to the magic of Marvel movies and the land of Narnia, our first guest has carved out a hugely successful career as a world-renowned cinematographer. He started out taking photos of his hometown of Armagh during the Troubles. He then moved into making music videos for artists like U2. Eventually, his work took him to the movies. His cinematography on many films, including Atonement and The Greatest Showman, have earned him numerous awards and seen him nominated for Oscars and BAFTAs. Seamus McGarvey, you're very welcome to the programme. I could ask, how did a young fella from Armagh end up on some of the biggest movie sets in the world? But for you, it started with a love of photography, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when I was growing up in Armagh, I just developed an interest in photography early on. I was just a bit of a loner, and I loved having the camera alongside me and taking photographs and seeing the place through a lens. It was an education for me. So I used to go on walks.
What kind of photographs did you take?
Well, they were mostly landscapes because, you know, there were solitary walks, me and my wee dog, Sooty. 5 mile, 6 mile walks. They were ruminative walks. You know, you think about things. And we're talking 1980, 1981, 2. So the times were turbulent in Northern Ireland.
Certainly were, very dark.
Yeah, it was a way of coming away from the real. And that's something that the camera has always been for me, even though I've worked in documentaries, but the fictional aspect of filming has always been something that I've enjoyed, you know, that poetic distancing from what's in front of your eyes.
And those early photographs, did you keep them? Do you ever look at them now if you still have them?
I do have them, and they're interesting in their amateurness, which is a word I actually like and always aspire to. In fact, I don't see amateur as a bad word, because it comes from to love something.
From those early photographs, you obviously got very good at it, and you more than dabbled in it, because you went on from there to start making music videos. And over the years, you've been involved in making music videos with people like the Pet Shop Boys, U2, Coldplay, Paul McCartney, the Rolling Stones. You spent a couple of months on tour with the Rolling Stones in Canada and America.
Yes, that was fun. The most enjoyable moments I've had in shooting music on film.
Did you get to know them well, Seamus?
Well, I did actually. Well, not you don't get to know big pop stars, but Mick Jagger actually ended up, he produced Enigma, which is a film I shot. He's great.
I have images of an Armagh man let loose with the Rolling Stones around American bars somewhere. It sort of conjures up quite a wild image.
No, you know what? I know they have that sort of Hellraiser kind of reputation, but not that the opposite is true. They have a very tight organization around them, and they're total professionals when it comes to putting on a gig, which is wild, and it is the Stones. But you know, that's the reason why they've lasted all these years, is that they're pros.
And did you end up getting interesting material from them that maybe maybe some of it didn't make the cut?
I think so. That's true. You know, the big revelation from that documentary, which was called Tip of the Tongue at the time, I don't know if that remained the title, but was Charlie Watts. And interviews with Charlie, rest in peace, they were so interesting because he was showing his sketchbooks that he would sort of drawings of unmade beds after a gig in the morning, after when he was leaving a hotel room, and he'd just spend the time doing those. And you realise that Mick and Keith sort of really relied on Charlie. He was kind of the arbiter, the referee of the band, and everything went through him. And, you know, I think he negotiated that sort of push me pull you between Mick and Keith. It was really interesting to sort of dip in and see that dynamic.
You also made Dusty Springfield's last video. She was in Galway. Tell me about that.
We were in Craig Castle in Galway. We shot it there, and myself and Sean O'Hagan, who's a writer, specializes in photography and writing about photography, cultural critic. And when we didn't know what end of a camera to look through, we got a call from Dusty Springfield. I don't know how, but she'd written this song called Roll Away. And Sean and I came up with this notion. We met her in Sony offices in London, and it was great to meet her. Dusty in Memphis is one of my favourite albums of all time. So
You were a bit starstruck.
I was, totally. And she was lovely. Mary O'Brien is her name as well. So, real name. And we went there, and we didn't realise at the time, but Dusty was quite ill at the time. So it ended up being her last video, and she died quite soon after we finished it. But it was a very emotional time there, and we shot this video, and I never forget it. When we wrapped the video in this beautiful oak-panelled room with a big fire, and we were having some tinctures at the end of the shoot just to celebrate having finished the two-day shoot, and Dusty got up and stood on a coffee table and sang a cappella, like, Son of a Preacher Man. I'll never forget it as long as I live. It was just one of the most memorable, and it was like in the acoustics of this amazing room. It was just fantastic to hear.
Wonderful memory to have.
Yep.
You moved on from music videos into the movie business and cinematography. You've got to sit down with the director and work out in advance, not completely, but how a film is going to look, what sort of visual feel it's going to have, right through from colours to lighting to ageing to how it's going to look and feel. And that's part of the collaborative thing. And then you've got to make that happen.
That's right. And it's very much in association with the costume designer, makeup and hair, the production designer, the assistant director, sound person, all those people, and especially the director and the writer at the genesis of it all. All those people are sort of tributaries to something that becomes one. And it's lovely to see that when eventually it's all finished and it's edited and the sound and the music is there and it's all properly graded, it's lovely to see that sort of synthesis of all those multifarious inputs coming together as something that's singular and unique and one voice. Hopefully an audience kind of smells it, sees it, feels it, and that's why films are good, I suppose.
You've had an extraordinary career. I mean, you've been nominated for Oscars twice, was it Atonement and Anna Karenina, and you've done High Fidelity, The Greatest Showman, Nocturnal Animals, 50 Shades of Grey, and The Avengers as well. It's a pretty varied CV in terms of the films you've done.
Yeah, it is varied. It's kind of surprising sometimes when I look back and I go, you know, why did I do that, that film? And why did I do that? And I'm sort of, I can't be choosy because I've got children. And I've got people to look after.
Does that mean you artistically regret a few of them?
No, I never regret, because the experience of doing even films that I did because I had to, because I was skint, I really had a wonderful time doing them. And actually, the act of photographing anything is such a privilege to be on a film set, as anybody who's involved in film will tell you. It's such a bonkers job to have.
You have been skint, have you, a few times along the way?
Oh,
because
God.
I wanted to ask you about how you got into it, from taking photographs in Armagh as a young fella to working as cinematographer on these huge films. I mean, it sounds like such a career trajectory. Were there a few, more than a few bumps along the way?
I've had to do like strange jobs, which I've loved doing as well, like assembling office furniture, or I was a painter and decorator for few years, but I was still doing films in between those jobs, because work was sporadic. So you can't always, when you're starting out in films, it's very difficult to get a run of films. And also when you're starting out, work is very lowly paid. So I did find it difficult at the start. So I had to have lots of jobs. I worked at the Institute of Contemporary Arts as a projectionist, as a ticket terror and usher, and many other jobs, which also I loved doing. I mean, I approach everything with enthusiasm and dedication to it, even if it's a meager payment. But at least you keep an engine running of, you'll be able to pay the rent.
You have worked with so many very, very well-known industry people, whether it's directors, whether it's actors. You must have had a few interesting experiences along the way.
I mean, there's always stories. I can't tell tales, but, you know,
Go on, tell us one anyway.
Well, I can't remember, but it's never boring. That's the thing.
You've told a story before about Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, I think it was. Yes, that's right. Well, I did The Hours with Nicole, and she wore this prosthetic nose. She was playing Virginia Woolf, who had a, famously extraordinary profile. And she would leave the nose on after work and go out for a drink and with the crew. And I remember this one time we were filming near Luton, and we went out and we ended up with a couple of crew members and Nicole in a karaoke place. And I remember Nicole singing Suspicious Minds to a pub full of people, with nobody in the pub having any idea who she was, because she had this prosthetic nose, which, funny enough, I have on my mantelpiece in Italy. I live in Tuscany in Italy, and I have it under a bell jar with a cast of Nicole's face, and it's just this little latex nose is sitting there as a treasure of that memory.
One of your earliest films, High Fidelity, which you did for Disney, do you ever reflect back? Do you ever watch those films again? Are you critical of your own work?
My God, yes. I mean, High Fidelity, I was so lucky to get that gig, which I got. The great Stephen Frears gave me the gig because I bumped into him in a pub in Edinburgh. He came to see Tim Roth's The War Zone, which I just shot and was premiering at Edinburgh Film Festival. And he came and he said, I sat down at this packed bar, and he said, what's your name? And I told him, and he said, I've been looking for you. He said, my cinematographer has left me, and I'm leaving for Chicago next week, and I need a cinematographer. I came here to see your work. And he'd never seen anything I'd shot before. I'd only shot a few films before, but somebody had recommended me. And he said, will you come to Chicago and shoot next week? He hadn't seen anything I'd ever shot. And I think after he saw the film, maybe he had second thoughts. But
it was too late then.
I did actually get the gig sitting around a bar at the Edinburgh Film Festival.
And how do you think you did in it? You don't think it was great, no?
High Fidelity, I was very young, and I would love to shoot it again, knowing what I know now, but it has a certain innocence, a complete innocence, in fact. It's not a well-photographed film, but it's beautifully directed, and that's what makes it a good film, which always reminds me that I should do my best as a cinematographer, but ultimately, if the script and the directing is not up to scratch, then you don't have a film. The photography is intrinsic to it, but isn't as essential as those elements.
One of the things where I came across your work more recently was the series Mussolini, Son of the Century, which was a portrayal of the rise of Mussolini in Italy and the rise of fascism. And it was absolutely stunning and stunningly shot. It used an awful lot of techniques almost like play, like theatre. But one of the things was that the Mussolini character every now and again would look into the camera and talk directly to the audience. And it was that moment where you felt you were being let into what he was really thinking. And there were a lot of visual devices in it. You did it with the director, Joe Wright. Was that something that you wanted to fit in with the whole theme and ethos of the rise of fascism?
Yes, I think it's essential viewing because of politically what we find ourselves in at the moment is a slide towards, sadly, a repeat of history. And Joe and I was very keen on doing this film and making it impactful, but also those looks to camera were part of, he wanted to make the character oddly sympathetic in how, you know, the lure of fascism through, you know, charismatic characters who are despicable in their own way, but can also draw people in. You can watch films in a kind of a distanced, lazy way, but when somebody breaks that wall by looking directly to camera, it's startling.
Do you find yourself, Seamus, watching people and their mannerisms?
Yes.
Very closely.
Well, I'm a people watcher. I'm a people lover. I love watching mannerisms. I love how distinct every person is. And I like people's quirks linguistically and physically. And it's something that I think that makes filmmakers good, because they can see that in people and depict that. And that is wordless. That's wordless, and it doesn't need language. It's very physical. I think we're kind of tuned as humans to look at each other like the monkeys we are.
Do you think that technology in some cases is getting in the way of that natural human watching process that can be captured in films? I'm thinking about 3D, CGI, and even AI.
I think that the sort of clinical perfection of AI, there are certain things that I've worked on that I've actually used AI, including Mussolini. We did a sequence that was shot with the help of AI that was, you know, a tracking shot of writhing bodies in a kind of an orgy, in a fascist orgy.
So it was easier to get AI to create it than to actually get actors to do it, wasn't it?
Well, it was 300 people in a top shot. But the weird thing was when that was typed in to an AI engine, it came back and it had actually used a video that I had shot for the Pet Shop Boys. And it used that as the template.
You recognised it, did you?
Yeah, immediately. But I had shot it with clothed people, but it rendered them naked and writhing. It was quite extraordinary. So there are ways. I'm afraid of AI, but I'm not as well. I mean, eventually it will probably overwhelm us all. But this moment, There's a kind of a hybrid where humans still have a artistic voice in that. I think that we've just got to find ways of cheating it, because it is a machine, it is a computer. And I think that our stupidities will ultimately kind of, it will probably learn them. But I think that our stupidities mixed with our sureties will kind of be able to fight it. I think that we're stupid and clever enough to trick it into us still having feeling in film, in having, you know, no AI engine ever had a hangover or their partner never left.
It can never do emotion.
We can rely on that, on the pain of life, which is the center of everything, and the joy of life that the computers will never feel. They can emulate, but they can't feel the accident. So that's the beauty of cinema, is the accidents that happen and the beautiful ones.
What would you say is the best trait to have for your job? Is it a visual eye? Is it technical know-how with cameras and lighting? Is it a simple thing like people watching or curiosity?
I think it's definitely a merger of all of those things, Richard. But I think that in order not to be fired, you have to be technically savvy, because it is a technical job. I can't deny that. But I think that to be good, only got to have a heart and a brain and empathy with your fellow human being, and to love what you work at, and to look at everything through love, then, and look at the world around you, and listen to music and enjoy art, and be vivid about feeling about people around you and the things that we look at and see. And that's exciting. Just look with light and love, and we'll all be all right.
You're regarded, Seamus, as one of the top cinematographers in the world in the industry, and your CV reflects that and what you've done. You mightn't say it, but a lot of people in the industry will say it. When you reflect back on those days in Armagh growing up and taking those photographs, did you ever think you would go in this direction and go so far in the direction you have? Were you ambitious for it?
No, not really. I mean, all I wanted to do was take good photographs, because it was a little camera around my neck, a Zenit camera, 35 mil in a dark room in my house. That's all I wanted to do. And in a strange way, it's still what I want to do. Although the kind of horizons have expanded somewhat these days, I still see myself as, Seamus from Armagh with a camera around my neck or on a tripod in front of me. It's still the same kind of active looking, active feeling that guides me and that I take enjoyment from and love telling stories through. I feel very lucky that the camera is my pen, you know, and the camera is my way of being able to tell stories. And I'm very lucky that I have the opportunity to do so and keep getting asked onto film sets to tell a story.
You're working at the moment on a new Narnia film with Greta Gerwig. And it's a long way from naked writhing bodies in Mussolini, I'm sure, but that's all part of the variety of the work. And that film is a Netflix project. It's due out next year, I think, sometime towards the end of 2026, I read.
Yes. So it's lovely to work with Greta. And I'm not really allowed to talk about it, but all I can tell you is it's a film that is saturated with childlike and adult imagination, and it's people are going to love it, I hope.
Do you get back to Armagh much, Seamus?
I don't go back that much these days. My parents died a long time ago, and I go back to see friends. And sadly, these days I go back for the occasional funeral or... but weirdly, I've been thinking a lot about the place I grew up over the last couple of years. And in dreams, I kind of walk around the streets. I have such vivid memories of home, of walking around the mall and walking around the town. And I realize that it has left an indelible trace on my imagination and on my memory. And I think that, you know, sometimes people ask, does the place you come from affect how you see or look? And I think unequivocally the answer for me would be yes.
Well, cinematographer Seamus McGarvey, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thanks for having me along there, Richard.